The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
...of a three-week series on greed, hatred, and delusion. So how many of you have been here for the last 2 weeks on greed and hate? A few of you. Oh, good. I can say anything I want. So the series is called The Wholesome and Unwholesome Roots. And the reason that we talk about that is that these roots, greed, hatred, and delusion, are really the source of suffering. They're the things that lead to suffering, primary mind states that lead to suffering. And their opposites of greed, hate, and delusion, are generosity, loving kindness and goodwill, and wisdom. So where are we going to live in greed, hatred, and delusion? Or in generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom? If we practice these ways of being, these positive, wholesome roots, we can be free of suffering. Sounds kind of easy, doesn't it? Sounds great to me. And in a sense, it actually is that simple. It's that simple. I remember as a young girl, a nun told me that the way to heaven was rocky and rough and definitely uphill, very difficult. And that the road to hell was smooth and easy and flowered and very flat. And I was horrified. I thought, why did she tell me this? Now it doesn't matter how I live. When I die, I'll just choose the rocky path. It seemed very clear to me. And I was horrified that she gave away this secret. Now, if we ignore the fact that I totally missed the point, I still marvel at the simplicity of the secret. It's really very simple. And yet, all it means is that we can choose the end of suffering. That's kind of a nice idea. I like that idea. We can't control what happens to us, but we can control how we respond to what happens to us. We can influence the experiences of our lives, and we can condition ourselves to happiness. Here's the secret as described by the Buddha. These are from the first verses of the Dhammapada, which is the collection of sayings that are the earliest sayings of the Buddha, the first things that were written down, the Dhammapada. And this is from a particular translation by Gil Fronsdal. These are the beginning verses. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a never-departing shadow. Sounds like the same message, doesn't it? Very simple. Do we act with a corrupted mind or with a peaceful mind? And how do we manage this? What do we do? In Buddhist circles, one very often hears about greed, hatred, and delusion. People throw it around like it's some sort of mantra. Well, greed, hatred, and delusion, the cause of suffering. But as I was thinking about this talk, I realized that it has become so commonplace to say greed, hatred, and delusion, it's almost like we don't think about what it means. Greed has to do with selfishness and inappropriate desire and attachment to things as they are or as we'd like them to be, how we wish them to be. Grasping for happiness and satisfaction really outside of ourselves. If I had that, if I could have that, if I could do this, if I could make that happen, I would be happy. This is greed. Hatred, on the other hand, refers to anger, ill will, hostility. those things that arise in us when we have aversion to people or things that are unpleasant, that we wish were not there. And once again, we're wishing that things were not the way they are. Sometimes we have aversion to our own feelings. Oh, how can I feel that way? How terrible. Right? And we direct this ill will toward ourselves because we don't like what is. And the what is part is the part that relates to delusion. Delusion has to do with confusion, bewilderment, misperception, wrong views of reality. So arising out of ignorance, these mind states of greed, hatred, and delusion motivate unskillful actions. We find ourselves doing things that we wouldn't necessarily choose to do, but because of these other factors, these mind states that we have, we're off doing these things that if we really thought about it, we don't mean to be mean. We don't mean to be hateful. We don't mean to be greedy. I'm not greedy. I just would feel better if my cushion were a little softer. We want something to be different than it is. And then there is a vicious cycle of repetition. The more we crave, the more we crave. It's like eating sugar. You eat sugar, you have a craving for sugar, and the more sugar you eat, the more sugar you want. Have you ever noticed that? I eat more sugar at Christmas than I do any other time of the year because it's there and I start eating it and then I want a little more. And it's like that. All of the habits of our life are like that. As we become engaged in these habits, they engender the same kind of pattern, and we create patterns of life. That's why it becomes very important to create a pattern that is more in line with the intentions of our lives. Speak or act with a corrupted mind and suffering follows. Speak or act with a peaceful mind and happiness follows. So when you talk about greed, you talk about craving something that you don't have or that you wish was different. You know, if we have this belief, if I only had a partner, if my partner would only not do that thing, if I could just have, you know, what I really need is a good car. I want a good car. Or I want an end to the war. I really want that. And we want that so badly that we can't accept anything the way it is. So it isn't about wanting per se, it's about wanting things to be different and having that not be acceptable when we can't make it happen. That makes sense? It's that desire to change that doesn't allow for what is. Wanting what we do not have, if we only had. And most of these things are outside of ourselves. This leads to unhappiness. This leads to suffering. And it's possible to cultivate the wholesome root of generosity, giving things away, of giving goodwill. And what it does is change what's going on in your head. You know, it puts you in a different space. And you're not always in that tight, contracted place, you know, where things are just not happening the way I want them to happen. And it's a much more open space and there's more freedom there. We want to exist in that place where there's freedom. So we cultivate the wholesome roots. We cultivate that part that gives us this freedom and openness. When we talk about greed and hatred, what we find is that there are these places where we hold on to things so tightly, we're unable to release our anger. We sort of live in a place of hostility. When we start thinking about someone who is irritating us, and we start repeat the story, and we're creating a mindset that this is an unpleasant world. This is an unpleasant place to be. This is not the way I want it to be. But the way to change that is not to keep repeating that story. It is, in fact, to stop telling that story. That's how to change it. Because you have to start with yourself. You have to not be entangled with hostility. And so one of the ways to do that is by doing loving kindness practice, wishing well for other people, creating some openness that allows other people to share in the happiness that we want. Because what we discover is we can't be happy if we're around a lot of people who are not happy. It's really because we're all in this together. We're sort of stuck with that. But tonight, what we're specifically going to talk about is delusion. Now, I said that to someone. I said, I'm going to talk about delusion. And they said, delusion? What's delusion? And I thought, well, everybody knows what delusion is. But, you know, it's kind of tricky. Delusion means believing something that's not true and acting from that belief. So we say, oh, that person is deluded. They think they're, you know, and they clearly aren't, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it is. The problem with it is if you're deluded, you don't know that you believe something that's not true. It's kind of a trap. You're sort of stuck in that place. It's not that we don't know anything. We know, but it's like being lost. And you can keep going down the path, but you're just on the wrong path. You can't get there from here. My husband and I were recently hiking in Utah, and we went down this really great canyon, and partway down we decided, well, you know, we're doing pretty well, let's do a loop. So we hadn't planned on doing this loop, and we said, sure, we can do that, and we set off on the loop. And what we didn't realize is in changing from one canyon to the next canyon, we had to go over a ridge that involved scrambling over rock. Now, the important fact here to know is that I am temperamentally scared of heights, really afraid of heights. So we started up this rock, and we were doing pretty well, but we quickly got to a place where I could no longer go on. I literally froze in place with my fear. Just, that's it. I could look at this little square rock right in front of me, that part where I needed to go next. But I couldn't move. I was totally frozen by fear. It was fairly steep, and I felt like I could neither go backward nor forward. And there I was, stuck right there. Have you ever found yourself in a place, not necessarily on a cliff, but some place where you felt like you couldn't go forward or backward, that you were there and there were no good options? There you are in this place. Now what do I do? And you become frozen. Everything stops. And it isn't so much like that you did something foolish, or you were taking risks, or that you were stupid, although that's what you start telling yourself when you find yourself in this place. It just happens. You didn't intend to get stuck in this place, but here you are. So there I was, and I told myself, I said, it's just fear. Just fear. Well, it was fear, and I couldn't talk myself out of it. And I was trying to push it away. I wanted it to leave. And I finally had to accept that I was terrified. No, I was really kind of angry that I couldn't talk myself out of it. But I was really scared. And it was only when I admitted that I was really afraid, there I was afraid, I was able to look at what was there. So I'd like to tell you that as soon as I was able to name it, that I was able to move on, but that was not true. I was still stuck in that place. I was entangled with this fear. I started asking myself questions like, now what's going to happen? And I could fall off this mountain. And I was thinking about the fact that I was fearful. And I was really becoming in, I was going into this story of this fear, and I'm sitting there on the rock going, oh my God, what am I going to do? My heart was pounding, my palms were sweaty, my limbs were weak, my mind was cloudy. I was going nowhere. But there were some thoughts that were going on, and I was listening to some of those thoughts. And there, one of them was, well, I can fall off the mountain or I can go over it. I'd like to tell you that made me go over it, but it did not. That was just the thought. Another thought was, well, one thing is sure, it's going to change. There's going to be a change. In my fear, I was convinced that I was going to fall. This wasn't true. In my fear, I thought I couldn't move anywhere. It wasn't true. It could have been, but it wasn't. It simply wasn't true. It's what I believed. I believed I couldn't move. I believed I couldn't shift my weight to the right place. There was nothing to be done. None of this was actually true. It's all what I believed. It was all delusion. The fear was real, but all that other stuff was not. All of the things I wrapped around it were not. All of these fearful thoughts were about what might happen, not what was true. The thought that was true is, this will change. And that was the insight that actually unfroze me. This will change. And then it didn't tell me what to do. It didn't tell me what to do, but I was no longer frozen. And I began to concentrate on what I was going to do. And I began to flow with what was possible. To release the fear enough to get over the cliff. Now, admittedly, I'd helped doing this. Somebody came along and helped pull me up, and my husband was behind me. So I got over. But then, who said there was no help? Who said I couldn't have help? Who said I had to do it all by myself? Who set up those conditions for getting over the top? Just my thoughts. There was nothing real about anything. My suffering was not created by the ridge. It was totally created by my own thoughts. And we do this all the time. We do this with things everywhere. Now, these thoughts were all generated by what I knew about myself, my assumptions. My legs can't do this. My limbs aren't long enough. All of these things were things I was knew about myself, all of which simply were either beside the point or not true. This is the world of delusion. This is where we believe things that control our behavior, control our feelings, and they're not true. They're just things we believe. And we become our thoughts. So while I was my fear, I was frozen on that rock. Luckily, I realized I couldn't stay there. You know? I couldn't stay there. Something was going to happen one way or another. It was going to happen. And that was just enough. Just that little bit was enough to just move me. It didn't get me over the lip, but it moved me. That was the important part for me. Now, what's interesting is that I kind of lost interest in the fear. I became much more interested in where I was going to put my foot and whether this person could grab my hand or not. I didn't have time to be thinking about the fear anymore. I just couldn't think about it. And that was interesting, that I lost interest in it. No. So this has been a really rich experience for me to think about my thought processes and to think about my beliefs and wonder how many of those beliefs are there in my life that control what I do every day, that are beliefs that are actually just delusions. They are not true. More commonly, I don't wrestle with fear so much as things like insecurity, inadequacy, loneliness. Oh, gee, I don't have any friends. Why don't I have any friends? It must be I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I was not very nice to somebody. Maybe I don't put any effort in it. All these stories that we build around things that are just thoughts. And in many cases, they're just random thoughts. They're not the result of quiet reflection that we're designing to find the truth of things. So the trick for us is, in fact, to find the truth of things. How do we find the truth of things? There's a kind of conceit involved with the belief that we can control our lives. We don't get to do that. That's not what life is about. Or that life is totally uncontrollable, that I can't control anything. Also a delusion. That's not true either. We can influence a lot of things that happen in our lives. We do influence a lot of things that happen in our lives. We just can't determine what the outcome is. We can set up goals. We can develop practices that lead to certain probabilities. We can behave in certain ways, but we don't know what's going to happen. We don't have that control. This is the home of delusion, the desire to control. We do that by defining ourselves, by controlling our thoughts. All of this is about things we wish were true. And sometimes we have selective beliefs. We look at somebody and say, oh, you know, she just looks so kind. I'm sure she's very kind. I'm so happy I know her. She's so kind. I have no evidence. She has a kind face. What does that mean? We believe a lot of things about people, and these are delusions. We believe a lot of things about ourselves. So the trick is to be awake enough to notice what is actually true. It isn't that we can't know anything. It's that we need to be able to see what's really true and stop the stories that are happening around it. Now, we're never, and I don't want to say never, I don't anticipate that I'm going to come to the place where I have no delusions. But I would like to be at the place where they're not ruling my life completely, where there's enough openness and freedom that I can allow the possibility of something else happening. And one of the reasons for this is that when we look at reality very closely, we discover a few things like the truth of impermanence. Things always change. That's one of my current happy ones since I got off that rock. Everything changes. Suffering arises from holding on to things and wanting them not to change, or wanting them to change, trying to control that change. But the act of grasping, which is greed, that holding on to something to prevent it from going away, that's not possible because things always change. They don't have to change for the worse. They don't have to change for the better. They're just going to change. This truth is something that we can live with, that we can look at, that will allow us to see things as they really are. Things do not stay the same. Now, you can't just take my word for it. You have to find out for yourself. That's how we get rid of our delusions, is seeing things for ourselves, examining our experiences for ourselves, looking at them directly. And one of the first things that you discover is that you're not who you think you are. We have lots of images of ourselves and ideas about ourselves that limit our capabilities because we say, well, this is the way I am. I don't like to speak in public. Or, I always speak well in public. Or, you know, I'm actually pretty clever. And that was really a clever thing to say, wasn't it? And everybody else is sitting back there scratching their head saying, what did she say? These are the homes of delusions. The things that we believe about ourselves. I can do this. I can't do that. I'm this way. I'm not that way. This is limiting who we are. And what it really does is say that there is a constant unchanging self. Well, we already know that impermanence means everything changes. That kind of calls into question that unchanging self. But once again, you have to learn to recognize that for yourself. You have to see that for yourself. It isn't useful for me to say this and you say, okay, that's true. That's just another belief behind which you can be deluded for a long time. You have to discover for yourself. And this is being able to recognize greed, hatred, and delusion is really the beginning to changing these roots, to awakening to another way of being, to being free. This understanding is the beginning of our ability to transform the unwholesome roots into wholesome roots. We have to see it first. One of the ways we do this is to train our minds, these minds that adopt these thoughts that we're busy believing, through meditation. And we cultivate stillness and mindfulness and concentration as a way to develop wisdom, which is the opposite of delusion. Right view and wisdom, the opposite of delusion. So how do we do that? You know, sometimes I think we sit down on the cushion, and I mean, this is Vipassana practice, right? So insight, that's the story. We sit down on the cushion and we expect insights to pop up like a rash, you know? Here it is, insight. I'm sitting, I'm going to have insights. Well, that doesn't happen either. It's not automatic. We have to start a little bit at a time to change the deep conditioning of our minds that we've been living with for our whole lives. We start small. My teeth are grinding. My teeth are grinding. I notice my teeth are grinding. I don't say, why are my teeth grinding? I say, oh, what else is happening? We develop a kind of curiosity. What's happening? What's happening? When we can examine what's really happening, then we can free ourselves of an attachment to an unchanging world. I've told this story before about a piece of calligraphy, a saying of Ajahn Chah that is in my glass cabinet. And it says, this glass is already broken, so I enjoy it immensely. Now, I have to tell you, this has become something that's really important in our house, because those glasses inevitably get broken. And every time I whip that out, this is actually a practice. It isn't because the glasses are important, but because I'm getting used to that. When a couple of weeks ago I was pulling out of my garage and I put a scrape along the side of my car on a shelf that I don't know how I managed to encounter, I was able to say, this car was already scratched. And I laughed at myself. I thought of that piece of calligraphy. Now, I could have been telling myself a story for the hour and a half it took me to get to where I was going about how stupid this was and how could I have done that and I shouldn't have been rushing. But I really just kind of laughed at it and said, okay, so now I've got a scratch on my car. And every time I look at the scratch on my car, I go, that was dumb. But I don't keep it. I don't stay there. You know, I don't stay there. And I blame that on that piece of calligraphy. The scar was already scratched. I don't like the scratch on the car, but I don't have to dwell on it. That's where the freedom is. So how do we practice with our thoughts? How do we get to the place where we can see things as they really are? One of the ways is very well described here in a poem by Thich Nhat Hanh. Those of you who don't know him, he's a Vietnamese Zen master who left Vietnam during the Vietnam War. He's in France, and he's an international teacher. And he wrote a poem called Froglessness. The first fruition of the practice is the attainment of froglessness. When a frog is put in the center of a plate, she will jump out of the plate after just a few seconds. If you put the frog back again on the center of the plate, she'll jump out. You have so many plans. There is something you want to become. Therefore, you always want to make a leap forward. It's difficult to keep the frog still in the center of the plate. You and I both have Buddha nature in us. This is encouraging. But you and I both have frog nature in us. That is why the first attainment of practice, froglessness, is its name. So, I wish you froglessness. We know that we want to leap forward, and we tend to jump off center. Our first goal, then, is to be patient and diligent. Put the frog back. Return to our standard when we stray, and be still. The next thing is to look carefully at what you hold most tightly to be true? What are those things that you hold on to as great truths in your life? Look at those things, because the deepest belief is perhaps the place that provides the home to our most closely held delusions. Those things that we absolutely know to be true, look very carefully there. Ask yourself, how do I know this to be true? Why do I believe this? What does this mean to me? How does this affect my life? I am that unchanging and stable thing that I know to be true. Much suffering is connected to threats to the self that we believe we are. Another way to look at the thoughts is through meditation practice, to follow the breath. The breath is very changeable. It doesn't hold still, it doesn't stay. It comes and it goes. Watch the breath. Notice what it does. It's impermanent, it's unsatisfactory, and it is not you. You do not control your breath. You can stop it for a while. You can hold your breath. But breath really comes and goes and comes and goes. And it isn't necessary for you to control it. One way to recognize the way that thoughts arrange our perception is to try to notice thoughts just as they're arising. Now, the best way to do this is when you're really still. Sometimes you can get to such a still place that you can see a thought just as it's coming through your mind. You can be so still that you see the thought come and go away. Now, the reason I say you have to be very still is that most of the time a thought will come up, and we're probably, by the time we recognize the thought, we've said the sentence about the thought three times in our mind, you know, whatever it is. But what you want is to find that thought before you get to paragraph 3 about that thought, just as it's coming up. Because if you can see it there, you have a chance to see it leave also. If you're in paragraph 3, you're already engaged with that thought, and that thought has become material, and it's become something that now you're engaged with, and you're going to wrestle it to the ground, that thought. Sometimes I'm sort of halfway through a sentence, and I notice the thought. And one of the practices that I do is to try to be aware of a thought without hearing the word in my head. Hearing the words in my head. Because you actually know things without those words. And it's one way to kind of step back. And so I'll not allow myself to say the sentence in my head, whatever it is. I don't know if this is making any sense to you. But it's because I'm such a verbal person, when I have a thought and I need to record that thought, I'm saying a sentence about it. But it's possible to stop in the middle of the sentence and know the whole thought. I don't really need those words. And it's a way for me to get at when that thought really arose. And it's a way of not engaging with it. If I don't keep saying that sentence three times over, the thought can go away. And what this tells me is that these thoughts are not mine. I don't own these thoughts. These thoughts aren't me. They're just thoughts. They come and they go. They are not me. That's a really interesting discovery, that your thoughts are not you. They arise and they pass away. And one of the reasons this is important is you can think something and then get angry with yourself for thinking something when it's just a thought that came up. And it's your reaction to the thought that's causing you suffering. You can just let the thought go. You know, yesterday I live on a road where the entrance is a very twisty, steep road. And there's a sign at the bottom of the road that says, "No trucks." Well, yesterday, a truck went up, and on the first curve, it jackknifed, blocking the road. Nobody could get in or out. And so there are about 100 houses on this road, and there were only two of them below where the truck got stuck. So it was interesting to watch what happened to people who were then stuck. Now, we have an alternate route where we can get through a fire road through the park to access the top. It's an emergency exit in the case of fire or in the case of a jackknife truck. So there's several ways to respond to that. One of them is to just go around, and it's about a 20-minute trip around to get back then. And you can just do that and go on. Or you can stand down at the bottom of the hill and you can say, "Now why did he do that? What a stupid thing to do. Why that idiot?" And pretty soon your mind is going off on this track of how awful everything is. And now you're sitting around feeling hostile and grumpy. And you may yell at this poor guy who's probably, you know, who knows, his boss is probably going to dock his pay for getting the truck stuck. You know, he thought he could make the turn or he wouldn't have done it. But I actually had somebody call me and ask, you know, why were people so angry with this guy and chewing him out and giving him such a hard time? And why was all this ill will generated? Because people weren't getting what they wanted. And that was unacceptable. It just is. You know, nobody was targeted by that truck. But it affected a lot of people. But somehow, if you can get outside of that, if you can step outside of that, that happened. Now, what am I going to do over here? Then you're free of that entanglement. And that's what we're looking for, is a way to step out of that. So, anger, hatred, and delusion, the unwholesome roots of suffering. We work to overcome these habits of mind, first of all, through mindfulness. We cultivate their opposites. When there's clear comprehension of what's really happening, we can be free of these roots. We can find a way of transforming our concepts into true wisdom. That's where we want to go, true wisdom. Suffering arises when we're caught, when we're tangled up with the greed, hatred, and delusion. Their absence gives rise to generosity, connectedness, ease. That's the freedom we seek. That's where we want to go. I'm going to read you one more thing here. This is a poem by Mary Oliver called Snow Geese. "Oh, to love what is lovely and will not last. What a task to ask of anything or anyone. Yet it is ours. And not by the century or the year, but by the hours. One fall day I heard above me and above the sting of the wind a sound I did not know, and my look shot upward. It was a flock of snow geese winging it faster than the ones we usually see, and being the color of snow, catching the sun. So they were, in part at least, golden. I held my breath, as we do sometimes to stop time, when something wonderful has touched us, as with a match which is lit and bright but does not hurt in the common way, but delightfully, as if delight were the most serious thing you ever felt. The geese flew on. I've never seen them again. Maybe I will someday, somewhere. Maybe I won't. It doesn't matter. What matters is that when I saw them, I saw them as through the veil, secretly, joyfully, clearly. What really matters is that when I saw them, as through the veil, secretly, joyfully, clearly. I wish you all to see through the veil, secretly, joyfully, and clearly. Thank you. So are there any questions or comments, observations? Does it make any sense?
When you were stuck on the rock, and you had all those thoughts, did you ever have the thought that you were deluded?
I tried to talk myself into it. I tried to say, this is just fear. It's not real. It's just fear. That did not work, because that was pushing it away. That wasn't actually seeing the delusion. It was trying to push it away. So no, I did not think I'm deluded. It's really my reflection on it that's led me to examine that and think about that. It's afterward. I'd love to have all kinds of... I'd love to tell you that I'm mindful all the time. But that's not true. And I'd love to tell you that I recognize a delusion when it shows up, but that's not true. That is the nature of delusions, that we don't know that we don't know. And we're locked into that belief system, those mindsets, those patterns of behavior, those ways of thinking about things. One of the ways of really unlocking delusions has to do with this being able to get very, very still. And it's one of the things that's nice about going on retreat, because it is an opportunity to get very still. I remember a number of years ago talking to a senior Dharma teacher and saying, you know, maybe I'm wasting my time, because I'm not going to be a nun. I live in the world. Does this mean that I really can't get from here to there? And he looked at me and said, why are you feeling sorry for yourself? What do you mean feeling sorry for myself? I'm not feeling sorry for myself. It was absolutely true. I was feeling sorry for myself. And he said, you have all the opportunities here. Why don't you try the experiment? And I think that was a really wise thing. Why don't you try the experiment? And one of the things I've discovered is that it's cumulative. This was really good news. When I first started meditating, I would find that after that I had a lot of trouble sort of focusing and getting still and concentrating myself, and I was all over the place. And that still happens. It hasn't gone away. But what's different is that I can get to stillness sooner than before. It just happens. It's like developing that mind state, that positive mind state. And so now when I sit down, sometimes my mind is just wild. And sometimes I can slip into that place that I recognize that is very open. And that's a really beautiful place, because then I'm very still and I can see things that I can't see when I'm busy running around, when I'm busy engaging all of the thoughts of my life. It's very hard to see delusions when you're managing all the things in your life. What's important is to recognize that delusions are there, so that you don't become frozen on some belief about yourself, about someone else, about conditions, because that's what leads to suffering. And that's what we want to let go of. We want to let go of those things that we know are absolutely true, that we don't have any evidence for at all. And sometimes it helps to look back. I've thought a lot about that rock. I think my husband's getting very tired of hearing this story, I have to tell you. However, it's been really useful for me. It's been really useful. Yes.
So I'll have to say that has been a wonderful talk, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think when you were talking about this attachment to something and this attachment to an idea of anything, I think for me, for the longest time, I was attached to this idea that I'm a fearful person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really interesting, that story you shared about the rock, because I can say only recently in my practice, it took a lot of loving kindness towards the self. And somehow I thought getting from here to there was all about not having anger, not having fear, not having delusion. And now, instead of my goal being, go away, you're not there, I'm suddenly enlightened, it's more of, you're there, and I'm okay with that. And it's such a powerful awakening to just realize that, and that fact that you're, you know, I'm not a fearful person. Fear is there, but I'm not a fearful person.
Thank you very much for that. It's very important to separate yourself from that. Fear is present, but I am not fear. That's thank you very much. That's very good. Yes.
It's a basic situation that when we're deluded, we do not know that we're deluded. Now, that example came through when you're being stuck in the rock. Somebody helped to help you. You could not have done it probably had you not had help.
I'm sorry, I could not have.
You probably would not have been to get out of it had you not had help. Maybe.
We don't know.
Well, that's what got you out.
It would have been harder.
Okay, you could have been there longer and then maybe come over it, I guess, right? But in fact, you did get help, thank God,
yes.
and you came out of it. I think the talk that you have is really wonderful in terms of that suffering comes from those three parameters, you could call them that, to the point where a lot of people have a need for that, to end their suffering by becoming aware that those three things do lead to suffering, right, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm getting at, bottom line, is are there retreats that concentrate a lot, if you may, on this subject of anger, greed, and delusion, and having an exchange from people and sharing what their, you know, what their conditions are and somehow getting out of it, because a lot of people just cannot do it themselves. So that's the question, are there retreats that do this?
Typically, the Vipassana retreats are about mindfulness. There are different kinds of retreats, however. I don't know of any specifically that address greed, anger, and delusion. Although I would say that in general, the Vipassana retreats treat greed, anger, and delusion. Because these are the things that arise when you're in meditation, when you are following mindfulness practices. On one of my retreats, I did a loving kindness retreat for a week, and I was very concentrated and very loving. It was ecstatic, beautiful. I followed that by a week of mindfulness. In the middle of that mindfulness retreat, I was totally overcome with anger. I was throwing pillows around the room. I shouldn't be here. This is destroying me. I can't stand this. I was really, really angry. I'd never been so angry. And I went to the teacher, and he said, whatever you do, don't do loving kindness meditation to get rid of your anger. Study that anger, learn that anger, know how it feels in your body. was a wonderful, wonderful instruction. And it was a wonderful time for me. I didn't enjoy it at the time, but I was living in the anger. I recognized the anger. I realized that the anger wasn't me. And I learned how anger behaves in my body. And I learned that anger hurts, which was something I didn't really appreciate before. So all of that happened in the context of a mindfulness retreat. And because the teacher was there to talk to me about it, I was able to use that experience in a positive way. Does that help?
Thank you.
Yes.
What you just said, that the anger wasn't you, I hear this a lot, surely people say that this is not me, but let's stay with the anger. So there is anger, and doesn't that define where I am or what I'm going through at this particular time? So this is me? I mean, at least for this amount of time that I'm dealing with it. That's what I keep asking myself, because I don't feel it when I say, oh, I'm angry, but it's not me, because this is me in this moment, or this is what the, I don't know, whatever.
So when you're angry, you have a feeling of anger. How do you know that you're angry? Something's happening.
Yeah, it can be everything, like physically, and physically is me.
Tell me what's happening when you're angry. Tell me what physically is happening.
I tense up.
Mm-hmm.
My breathing is faster.
Uh-huh.
I usually have unskillful thoughts.
Uh-huh.
And I am nervous. I start biting my cuticles, or like I move more. Oh, there's more, but this is basically,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, where my feet. Mm-hmm. It's like I can't hold them still. I walk around, hike around, run around. So I move.
So when anger is present, what you notice is that you're tense, that you chew your nails, that you have unskillful thoughts. All of these things are true.
Right.
What is not true is that you are anger. What's true is that all of these things are happening. The reason I'm making this separation is that it gives you enough space that you don't have to be the angry person. Anger is happening. Anger is present. And it's being manifested by all of these things. I'm going to go back to the example of me on the rock for a moment. All the time I spent trying to push away the fear or talk myself out of the fear was all time when I wasn't admitting that fear was present. So then I said, okay, this is fear. This is fear. This is fear. Then I became entangled in the fear and I got wrapped up in it. And I made it me. I'm just a bundle of fear sitting here on this rock. But when I thought about everything changes, then that fear couldn't be me anymore. Because it was temporary. It was just a thing that happened. That's what I mean by... That's what I mean by separating yourself from it. Okay? It isn't you. You are experiencing the anger. No question about that. But it doesn't define you. You don't have to hold on to it and say, mine, my anger. It's just there. That much distance is space that gives you a choice of what to do. And over time, it changes. It will change. And there'll be something... When I get angry now, as a consequence of this experience I had on retreat, it doesn't mean that I never get angry, but when I get angry now, I can feel it happening, and I know it's going to hurt. And I don't want to hurt. So I say, okay, anger. I'm going to leave it over there. It doesn't mean that I automatically, that all of those autonomic responses going into my body change. It just means that my relationship to it is a little different. And I don't hold on to it. I just don't hold on to it because I don't want it. When I notice that I am holding on to it, I notice that I'm telling myself the story to keep myself pumped up. Yeah. Keep telling the story. I'm getting over this injustice, right? And as you keep telling yourself that story, you're building up all that energy of that anger. But if you stop telling the story because it actually hurts, then there's a space. So it's now 9 o'clock. I hope this happened. I hope this helps. But we do have to stop. So thank you all. May the blessings of this teaching be with all of us for your happiness and freedom.